Excellent. This is part two of the sheer topic of zoning violations and halacha. We covered a little bit last week in terms of mesira issues, if there were complaints that are registered in front of a zoning board with respect to zoning violations, and we spoke a little bit about the opinion of the Shevet HaLevi of when it is appropriate or potentially appropriate to come in front of a zoning board instead of a Beis Din. The Shevet HaLevi basically said that if there's a clear minhag, and if the Beis Din itself is incapable of dealing with the situation, then it could be countenanced. And he seemed to take into account the possibility that maybe the zoning board is really just functioning as an agency that's enforcing the minhag, like you would have these arbitration boards for different industries that would just enforce the customs of the industry that were not really considered to be an issur or kos. He does not definitively say that, and then he tentatively suggests that in certain places like B'nai Brak, where everybody is from, the members of the zoning board could have the status of Zayin Tuvei Ya'ir, as the elders of the city. The Rama writes in Siman Lamed Zayin that if you're functioning as Zayin Tuvei Ya'ir, you have to be Kasher Le'Eidus. So it's not something that would automatically pertain to every single community. I don't know the identities of every single member of the zoning board in the Chicago area, but he thought maybe B'nai Brak that would work. So we discussed a little bit whether that was a possibility. Yes?
General question. Because the original source is referred to Dayanei Obei Kochavim, okay, if you have, like in Eretz Yisrael, you have, it's not from the Rabbanut, but it's, let's say, the secular court of, I don't know, Haifa or Tel Aviv or something. Does that have any different status because it's clearly not Obei Kochavim?
This is a very controversial issue. Menachem Elon, who Emil was speaking about in his correspondence to me over the course of the past week, he came to Chicago, apparently gave a lecture in which he spoke about the status of the civil court system in Israel, and apparently was even presenting a zoning issue relating to women of the wall or something like that. And in the course of his general presentation, he hearkened to his whole Mishpat Ivri approach, that you can have these courts that are set up that aren't necessarily premised upon Jewish law, but he tried to bring in Jewish law to the civil court system in Israel, which he defined as Mishpat Ivri, and his entire feeling was that he was buttressing a system that was already somewhat prima facie legitimate, because the courts were set up by Jews, for Jews, of Jews, in the state of Israel, and therefore would be something akin to what the Rashba discusses based on the Gemara in Sanhedrin, to Arkosha Besuria, where you would have certain Jewish communities that did not necessarily have big time in the Chachamim, but nonetheless they would appoint certain Jewish individuals in those communities to adjudicate cases. If they had really difficult shilos, they would refer the shilos to maybe the elders and the big talmidei chachamim of another city. Like, for example, if they had to deal with capital cases or something, which they had jurisdiction over in many communities. And the Rashba writes that you could have, where he was discussing in Europe, you could have communities where you just establish certain people who have good sekel hayasher, they have good general judgment, even though they're not big talmidei chachamim, and they would adjudicate cases. So he said that similarly, you could set up in Israel people who are not necessarily functioning as talmidei chachamim, they were just applying different types of precepts and statutes according to what they thought was fair and just and good for the people, and that would qualify. I think Rabbi Gorin made maybe a similar argument. There were many, many, many gedolim at the time of the establishment of the State of Israel who were not buying these arguments in a really big way, including the Chazon Ish, including Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, including Rav Yitzchak Isaac Halevi Herzog, later on Rav Avadya Yosef. Rabbi Yechezkel Abramsky, they all wrote very, very strongly that they felt that this was a travesty. It's one thing if you have a community where there are no learned people and you have no choice but to appoint Jews on the local tribunal that's going to use their good common sense because you don't have any Talmidei Chachamim, but you have plenty of Talmidei Chachamim, big Rabbanim, including the ones who are complaining, who are certainly qualified to sit as a Beis Din in Eretz Yisrael and to apply Jewish law. And furthermore, it said that the other major problem and distinction between what was set up in Israel and the idea of Arkol Shebisurya is that Arkol Shebisurya were individuals who may not have been Talmidei Chachamim, but they just used their good judgment to do what was Yashav V'Tov, what they felt was right and just and proper under the circumstances. Maybe they would look at local custom as a possible source for their decisions. Maybe they would even look a little bit to the secular laws that they were able to read and understand a little bit, but they weren't bound by the secular laws. So if you look at the Lashon of the Me'iri, for example, in that Gemara, the Me'iri said that they would decide according to their best judgment, and that they would also look at Minhagim, and they would look at Nimusim, they would also look at maybe certain things that were practiced as part of the law of the jurisdiction where they lived, but they weren't bound by it, and they didn't feel that they needed to apply the law of the land. If they would have functioned in that way, so then the Chazon Ish says that this constitutes a haramas yad b'toras Moshe Rabbeinu. The same way that Jews who have a dispute with each other are not allowed to litigate in front of secular courts because they're Isaramites, it's considered like you're raising up your arm against the Torah that was given to us through Moshe Rabbeinu. So too, if you're going to completely dismiss and completely bypass a Jewish law in favor of a secular law system that's based upon Ottoman law, that's based upon British law, that's based upon ancient Roman law, it's based upon American law, whatever type of system, everything other than Jewish law, basically. So then that's like a slap in the face with respect to the Torah Moshe Rabbeinu, and would constitute something that is absolutely reprehensible. So Yechezkel Abramsky went so far as to say, it's worse than a civil court system that is set up outside of Israel, because there, at least, the non-Jews have an obligation to set up their own independent court system. It's not necessarily something that has to be a Beis Din. It's their own court system. It's one of the Zion Mitzvot B'nei Noach, which is to establish Dinim. But we, as the Jewish people, are specifically required to set up a Beis Din system, and not to set up a secular court system. So while their secular court system has some legitimacy, because it has legitimacy with respect to themselves, the civil court system that's set up in the state of Israel has zero legitimacy, none whatsoever. So we felt very, very strongly about this. Ad kedei kach, that a shaila was posed by Rav Zilberstein at one point in time, to Rav El Yashiv. I think Rav El Yashiv was his father-in-law. So he posed a shaila to him, saying that given the position of Yechezkel Abramsky, normally if you have a case, like we have a case in the CRC, where Reuven summons a Shimon to come to the Beis Din, and Shimon says that I refuse to come to Beis Din. So what recourse are you able to give to Reuven? So you could say to Reuven, oh, well, you have the right to take Shimon to the secular courts, because in this case Shimon is refusing to come to Beis Din. So he asked the Shiloh, that's only because the secular court system has some legitimacy. Since it has some legitimacy, so in certain extreme cases where Shimon is refusing to come to the Beis Din can authorize Reuven to go and adjudicate his case in the civil court system, because in this type of situation where Reuven tried to come to the Beis Din and the other party refuses, so we can allow him to use a system which has its own internal intrinsic legitimacy. But maybe in Eretz Yisrael, you have no right to give a heter or a kos to go to the civil court system. So Rav Yoshi responded, he said, it's a good argument, but it's okay anyway. Why is it okay anyway? Because the Chasam Sofer explains that the reason why a Beis Din is able to give a plaintiff a heter or a kos altogether, to say that even though the Torah says Eilu Mishpatim Asher Tarsim Lifneihem, Lifneihem Lo Lifnei Arkos, the cases have to be brought only to Beis Din and not to a secular court. So if it's an Isser, it's a prohibition, how can Beis Din give leave to somebody to commit an Isser, to do an outright prohibition? We don't say, oh, well, we as a Beis Din have decided it's okay for you to eat a treif. No, we don't have that jurisdiction to authorize somebody to eat treif. So how can we have jurisdiction to authorize somebody to go to the secular court system? So says the Chasam Sofer that the reason why it's legitimate is because when the Beis Din authorizes somebody to go to the secular court system, the secular court is serving essentially as an agent of the Beis Din. So it's not serving as a cause per se, but it's serving as the long arm of the law of the Beis Din. So to explain, Rav Yashiv, I believe it was Rav Yashiv, said to Rav Zilberstein that in this case as well, it's not necessary for the bagatz itself to be intrinsically legitimate. In this particular case, when the Beis Din gives a heter kos, it's serving as the long arm of the Beis Din, as an agent of the Beis Din, therefore it would be legitimate under those circumstances. Yes.
In Israel, there's one big judge. They don't necessarily have to be Jews.
That's also true. When the State of Israel was originally established, I think the judges at that time were pretty much all Jews. Now it's not necessarily the case anymore. This is part of sort of the one state approaches, shall we say. But I think at the time that these Jews were being written, that wasn't even part of the contemplation. That wasn't even a part of the puzzle. But this could be part of what the Mitzitz Eliezer had in mind. Mitzitz Eliezer, and that's actually in the materials, so it's just a good segue to it, I suppose, on some level. The source 11, the Mitzitz Eliezer said, wait, hold on, source, I'm looking at last week's material, so maybe by now it's a different number. So I'll tell you in a second if it's a different number.
13,
thank you. The Mitzitz Eliezer, source 13, was asked about a question of not quite a zoning board. See, the zoning board lives in sort of this quasi-mysterious space where the Minchas Tzvi, for example, or Tzvi Spitz, who's a prominent distinguished Dayan in Eretz Yisrael, who's written a number of volumes in the Minchas Tzvi series on Choshen Mishpat. I think some of it has been translated into English, in fact, as well, that you can pick up. So in his very first volume of Minchas Tzvi and Siman Tezayin, he speaks about zoning boards, and he gets very worked up about how it's an actual issue of our coast. If you're going to bring a zoning violation, for example, in front of the zoning board, and he says the reason for that is that it's considered to be an extension of the governmental court system, that you have a legislative system with various laws are enacted, the zoning laws are part of that, and then you have different courts, they might be official bagats, civil courts, that you go to a courthouse and you adjudicate the case, but even the zoning board, since it's part of the governmental system, so he feels it's really part of the court system, that is not the Beis Din, since it's part of the court system, so he feels that it really, to give somebody over, you see that there's a zoning violation, and you're going to report it to the zoning board so that they could punish the person and so forth. He thinks it's an outright prohibition of mesira, of giving over the individual to the non-Jewish court system, and he feels that it's a very serious prohibition. Now this is sort of interesting, because the Pesach Choshen, when he talks about these issues, he says that he can't quite necessarily place where the zoning boards of a community fall out. He doesn't feel that it's full-fledged Arkos. At the same time, it's not full-fledged Beis Din either. And it's not quite either an arbitration tribunal of a particular industry, which would not be problematic altogether, because it is, on some level, an arm of the overall court system of justice, that you do have courts that are going to enforce zoning laws and the like. It is part of the legal system, so he feels that it is somewhat problematic, but not necessarily as problematic as our coast. And I think that's part of the tension of this subject and why it's sort of a little bit difficult to even to approach this subject, because I don't know that there's a complete consensus about what the status of the zoning boards, you know, actually are. According to some, it's actual or close. According to others, it's somewhere in between. According to the Shevet Halevi, maybe if it's B'nai Brak and everybody's from, maybe there's Zayin Tuve Yair. The end of Siman Reish Lamed Aleph and Chol Shem Mishpat speaks about how you could have different professions and different trades that get together and they make enactments that are going to be binding upon everybody in that trade, and they can enforce their enactments, and they have the ability themselves to penalize individuals as well. And the way in which that halacha is phrased at the end of Siman Reish Lamed Aleph and Chol Shem Mishpat is that this applies not only to B'nai Umnus, not only to professions, but also to B'nai Ha'ir, that all the people in the city can make various enactments of relating to how commerce is going to be conducted within the city, and then it's going to be binding on everybody. So if they can make those enactments, and presumably they're allowed to impose penalties, so why can't you just say that the zoning board is a representation of the entire city? We elect officials, we appoint a zoning board, and they're simply enforcing those enactments. So the answer presumably is, and Minchas Tzvi, by the way, struggles with this, meaning he addresses this question in his tshuva, and he says, no, the difference is because this particular board is a part and parcel of the governmental system. So the same way in which you're not supposed to utilize a kol, so you can't utilize a board that's going to assess penalties and enforce penalties that is part of that system. If it would just be the B'nai Ha'ir on their own doing this sort of thing, and it's not part of a recognized governmental court system of our coast, so then that would be a different story, but he thinks that it really is. So the Tzitz Eliezer dealt with something which was sort of in, I suppose you could say, neutral territory. That he's dealing with a particular neighborhood. Maybe it could be a co-op. It could be a co-op association, where neighbors will sometimes have disputes with each other. And they have an arbitration board that sits in this co-op association. And the arbitration board and this housing association makes determinations of how to resolve neighborly disputes. And they utilize their own good judgment when it comes to the resolution of those disputes. So the question was, is this a problem of our coast? Is this a problem you have? This is within the state of Israel. You have Jews who, instead of going to the Beis Din, they're going to this neighborhood or association of arbitrators, or the arbitrators are resolving all of the disputes. So the Tzitz Eliezer quotes from Rabbi Akiva Eiger at the beginning of Choshen Mishpat. Rabbi Akiva Eiger at the beginning of Choshen Mishpat says that if, let's say, that Reuven and Shimon are both in the diamond industry, and Reuven says to Shimon, hey, we had a deal. We shook our hands, we said Mazal Ubracha, and you're not coming through on your deal, and I'm going to take you to Beis Din. And Shimon says, no, I'm not going to Beis Din. I want to go to the arbitration board of diamond dealers, and they'll decide whether there was really a handshake or not, whether this case falls within the parameters of our customs, and that's where I want to go. So says Rabbi Akiva Eiger, quoting from the Maharshach, he says that who wins this dispute? Shimon wins the dispute. Not the dispute as to whether he's obligated, but the dispute as to what is the appropriate forum to adjudicate the dispute. Shimon said, let's go to the board of arbitrators of our profession, and he has absolutely 100% the right to say that, because halacha recognizes minhag hasochim, just like the Gemara in Bava Metzia talks about how you can have special kinyanim, special types of acquisitions that work through modes of transaction that are not necessarily stipulated through the Torah. It's not kesef, it's not meshicha, it's just that you have a handshake or something, or you mark a barrel and you put a mark on the barrel, and that means that the barrel has been sold to a particular merchant. That's called situmta. So the same way that situso says the Gemara, situmta is considered to be a binding kinyan. That's a binding form of acquisition, because that's the custom of the merchants in the marketplace. So too, said Rabbi Kibega, the custom of the merchants is that when they have a dispute, it comes in front of this particular board, and therefore that's binding success. It's Eliezer, by the same notion, having this type of board of arbitrators that's going to adjudicate disputes between neighbors is considered to be 100% binding. But the reason he explains why it's not a problem of our coast, as you'll say, of course it's not a problem of our coast, because it's not part of the governmental system. The thing is, it was. The Tzitz Eliezer's case, this was an entity that was a creation by statute, that it was a statutorily mandated arbitration board that would decide issues of disputes in housing associations. The Israeli law set forth that within every single such association, within every such housing association, you're going to have a board, and they're going to decide all disputes, and everybody's going to be obligated to follow what they decide. So it was a statutory creation. And therefore, you would have thought that maybe it's a problem of our coast. So Tzitz Eliezer I don't know that it's really such a perfect answer, to be perfectly honest, because it's a good kasha. Maybe this is the same problem. If we're going to assume a zoning board is a problem, maybe this is also a problem, because it is something that is mandated statutorily. So the Sicilianser says, no, it's not a problem, because of the fact that the members of the co-op board are not required to follow any particular law or legislation. They simply are allowed to decide the cases, much like our Kol Shebisuria, in accordance with their good, sound judgment. And since they're only following their good, sound judgment, and they're not obligated to follow a particular legal system, that's the reason why it's not a problem of our Kol. So if we go back to the zoning model, maybe it's something in between. And was it Tzitzeliezer? Now, again, this is an interesting question. He didn't say that this was coloring his decision in any way, but was he somewhat also taking into consideration the fact that all the members of this arbitration board were all Jews, and we're talking about the state of Israel? And maybe he wouldn't have said the same thing if it was outside the state of Israel. I can't answer that question because he didn't answer that question or even address it, but I suspect that maybe that has something to do with it as well. But here, when you're talking about the zoning boards, it's sort of interesting because it's a statutory creation that you do have the zoning boards, but the zoning boards are also applying the actual laws that have been adopted, the actual rules and regulations that have been legislatively adopted through these zoning associations that then become sort of part and parcel of the law. So you can say that this is why it has a little bit of this connotation of our chaos, and the fact that they are imposing penalties might be something that we would view as problematic if you're going outside of the system of Bezdin. So even the Shevet HaLevi, who was sort of lenient on this subject, as Rabbi Beit's article that we quoted last week indicated, Rabbi, he was only lenient in the event that the Bezdin was somehow powerless to deal with these disputes. But a Bezdin could deal with these disputes, so then he felt Bezdin should deal with these disputes. Now, as I mentioned last week, wait a second, Larry, you had your hand up.
No, I was just thinking, the approach I would take to this is, what are the definitions of being our codes? So that you could then apply in each case, instead of just randomly arguing each individual case, there should be some criteria.
You're 100% right. And the basic criteria of our codes is a court system, that you have a governmentally established court system. Generally speaking, our courts will be a court of primary jurisdiction because they're established by the governments and they have the ability to summon people to come in front of them and to follow whatever they say. That's one aspect of our courts. And the second aspect of our courts is that they're deciding in accordance with the secular law of the land. That's the second aspect of our courts. Rabbi Black, in his writings, writes about both of these aspects, and he makes the argument that all you need is one of these two aspects in order to have a problem of our courts. So, for example, if you had an arbitration tribunal that decided that they're going to take upon themselves to only decide cases in accordance with secular law, that would also be a problem of our cause. So let's say the Bezdin, that the CRC, the Chicago Rabbinical Council Bezdin, would say, okay, we'll open up a business, and we're a Bezdin serving the community, but by the way, whenever we decide a case, we're only going to decide the case in accordance with secular law. So says Rabbi Blyth, that clearly would be a problem of our coast. But I think the Chazon Ish would also say that clearly would be a problem of our coast. It's not a problem of our coast, and we've spoken about this in the past a long, long time ago. Now we're a very, very original shiur. It wouldn't be a problem if you had an individual case where two parties appeared before the Bezdin, and they said, we have a private condition between the two of us that we feel our transaction should be governed by secular law because that is our customary practice of dealing. So that's just following minhag hasochrim in terms of the practice of these parties and implementing a tnai shemamon, a monetary condition, that wouldn't be a problem. But
would a Bezdin take that on always? Would sometimes refer to a court? If you're going to do that, you should go to a court.
No, the Bezdin will take it on, unless the Bezdin feels that it's something which is completely beyond its capacity. Like, for example, a criminal case. So the parties come and they say, it's okay, we'll just follow whatever the criminal law says. And the criminal law says that you'll place the perpetrator in jail, so we give the Bezdin the authority to do that. The thing is, even if they give us the authority, the state doesn't give us the authority, so therefore we won't be able to handle the case. Or if they come to us and they say, we want to follow secular law, but secular law says that Reuven has charged Shimon interest for a loan, and they want it to be, and the lender says, I want the Bezdin to to enforce this according to secular law, we're not going to be able to, because that's not just a monetary matter, but that's a ritual matter. We can't allow the parties to stipulate to violate a ritual prohibition. So part of the discussion regarding the zoning laws is to what degree does the Beis Din say, or even give leave to go in front of the zoning board to enforce some sort of an objection to something which one party really has the right to do. So, for example, Rabbi Yosef Fleischman, who runs the Beis Din in Mattersdorf, in Eretz Yisrael, the Nesivos Chaim Beis Din, this is where Rabbi Zev Cohen was learning for several months, actually. So Rabbi Fleischman writes in his book, Money Matters, that he dealt with the following question, where somebody wanted to know, could they go in front of a zoning board in order to stop a shul from building in a particular area in a way that they were going to block a right of way that the public had, that had been a vacant lot that was owned by the shul for a long time. Now they finally got around to building on the shul. But for a long time, people were using this vacant lot as a shortcut to get from place A to place B. Now the shul wants to take away that shortcut, that right of way. So can they go in front of the zoning board and argue that there was a right of way that was established? And even if the shul, if they want to build a shul, they have to maintain the right of way, but it's going to make it much more difficult in terms of the aesthetics of how this congregation wants to build its shul. So what Fleischman says, well, in this particular case, from a halakhic perspective, there is no right of way, because to have a right of way, there has to have been a reason to have objected when the public was originally using the right of way, and while it was a vacant lot, and the shul had really no use for the property, there was no reason for them to object. If there was no reason for them to object, so then no chazaka is established. He quotes a Marashdam along those lines, and also there's an opinion of Rashbam that says that simply walking in an area does not give anybody a chazaka in terms of a right of way. You'd have to actually build a railing around the walkway, or do some sort of null gadu parts type of an improvement upon the property. But walking alone is not sufficient. And also there are opinions that say, I think Amar Sham, that nowadays when you have a person's property registered in the land records of the town, then there isn't really a concern that you would need to get up and say, oh, don't walk through my property, because you figure if you have to prove that it's your property, you can always go to the land records anyway. So there were all kinds of reasons why halakhically there was no right of way that was created. So he says, given that there was no right of way that was really created halakhically, and the shul itself does not need to get any kind of specific permission to build its shul on the lot that it itself owns in a way that might take away this public right of way, as long as the public doesn't, and nobody in the public opens up their mouth and complains in front of the zoning board. So he says in this case, it would be absolutely prohibited to complain in front of the zoning board, even though it's possible if the people of the community who have been walking through this area would complain in front of the zoning board, maybe they would be given their request that they would be allowed to retain the right of way. But he says that it would not be permissible under these circumstances. But he points out that sometimes you do have the right to protest. And this is where you have a very interesting literature that I alluded to last time around, intended to start with it, but this is fine, this is more interesting to go about it this way, which is a tshuva of the Avnei Nezer based upon a Maharik. And I mentioned the Maharik. The Maharik was a Rishon, of course, came up with this whole very interesting and energetic discussion, a very energetic and spirited tshuva that the Maharik wrote. This is Simon Kupsari Aleph in the Maharik, where he gets very, very animated about the following issue, that they used to have what's known as a Cheskas Yishuv. Cheskas Yishuv meant that there were Jews who lived in a particular community, and they were very proprietary about their community. They were able to have businesses, sometimes it would be money-lending businesses, whatever it was, and were able to make a decent living amongst the non-Jews. If there would be too many Jews, then the non-Jews might get upset. Hey, there are too many Jews here. You have too many Jews engaged in business, so maybe we'll take away business from the Jews who already live there. So Cheskas Yishuv meant they were given the right. They were given the right by the non-Jews to live in a particular area. That was considered to be a big deal. You had these country clubs, right? No Jews and whatever else. allowed. So if somebody would, you know, a Jew would be allowed into the country club, that would be considered to be like a very, very big deal. So Jews being allowed to live in, unless you took like the Groucho Marx attitude, you know, that you didn't want, really want to be part of any club that would let you in as a member. But, you know, here that was the idea. They weren't easily allowed in as a member. So it was a big deal to be allowed to live somewhere and conduct business. So interestingly enough, the Jews who were already there sometimes wanted to stop other Jews from coming in, if you can imagine such a thing. So the Ma'arik deals with a situation like this, where they have a nice little community in Mantova, in Italy, and the Jews there are making a living, and there's some other Jew from from some other community outside of Mantova who wanted to come in, and he'll pay the taxes of the city, and he wants to open up a competing business with the local merchants. When the local merchants complains to the Ma'arik that I want to stop this fellow from coming into the city, and the other fellow says, but I have a right to come in. The Gemara in Bava Basra says that this quotes from Puna Braid Rabbi Yeshua, that if you live within a city, so one person can't stop another person from opening up a competing business within the city, but you can stop somebody who's a bar masa acharina, somebody who is a resident of a different city from coming in and competing with the business that's taking place in the city, unless he pays the taxes. If he pays the taxes, it's perfectly fine. But the Gemara doesn't explicitly talk about, well, can you stop him from coming into the city altogether? If there's no way of stopping him coming into the city, comes into the city, starts paying the taxes, so fine, so then he can compete. But are you allowed to take efforts to stop the person from coming into the city altogether? So here, you have a machlokes between some Mishnah, I think Rashi, who says that you can stop the person from coming in, and then you have Rabbeinu Tam and the Rosh, who says, no, a person can live wherever they want, you can't stop the person from coming in. So says the Ma'arik, yes, you can stop the person from coming in Beis Din. You're going to go in front of Beis Din. Beis Din will say, yes, according to the Rosh, according to Rabbeinu Tam, that this other figure is, this person from the other city is perfectly allowed to come into the city. But you know what you are allowed to do? What you're allowed to do is that you can fend for yourself. Hey, you know, it's only fair. This fellow from the other city is going to take away some of the panasa of those who are there by coming into the city. So those who are already there can use their best efforts to try to sabotage his efforts from coming into the city in the first place, and to stop him from making a little bit of extra panasa. If he could do it to them, so it's fair game for them to do the same thing to him. So says the Ma'arik, so that by the same token, that he thinks that you can take the law into your own hands, so to speak, to stop somebody from taking something that you want. So you can go to the Sarair. You can go to the governor of the city and say to the governor of the city, don't let this person into the city. And he says that's perfectly legitimate. And he goes so far as to say that's perfectly legitimate, l'kuleyama, meaning even Rabbeinu Tam and the Rosh who say that a Beis Din wouldn't stop the other fellow Shimon from coming into the city where Reuven already lives, into Mantova. Even Rabbeinu Tam would agree, and the Rosh would agree, that it's perfectly legitimate to use non-Beis Din approaches to stop Shimon from coming into the city, even going to the Sarair. Sarair is like going to the municipality. It's like going to the zoning board. It's like exactly this type of situation. Say, hey, we're not zoned for this fellow Shimon to come into our city. He's not part of our Cheskas Yishuv, so to speak. And therefore we want you to stop him from coming into the city. And it says it's no different from all the Gemaras that talk about, that we spoke about this when we were talking about Ani Amahapech B'Charora, right? That you have the Mishnah of Messiah Daf Yunam and Aleph. It says somebody sees a Messiah. They see a lost object that's valuable, and they jump on it, but they don't have possession. They see a basketball. They're jumping on the basketball in the middle of the court, but they don't have the basketball. It's perfectly legitimate for somebody to undercut them, go underneath them and grab the basketball. And we say that no harm, no foul. The person who grabbed the basketball underneath is 100% entitled to the basketball because the first person didn't have possession. It doesn't seem very nice. The first person fell on the basketball. He's trying to gain possession. Yeah, but the other team wants it just as much. And therefore, they're allowed to struggle for the basketball. So the Ma'arik brings this example, okay? straight out of the NBA, Baba Mesiya Daf Yuna Manalev, as to why this is considered to be 100% legitimate. Not only does the Ma'arik think that this is 100% legitimate, but he is beyond emphatic about it. Beyond. He says, pshitu, pshitu, probably around a dozen times over the course of the tshuva. Count the number of times that the word pshita appears in the tshuva. It's unbelievable. And he goes so far as to say that any dayan that wouldn't pass in this way should lose his license, doesn't know what he's doing, has no business being involved in hora. He's very, very sure of himself regarding this tshuva. Now, the Beis Yosef wrote his work, the Beis Yosef, on the Torah, and it was a very fine work, as we know. But then, after he finished his work, the Beis Yosef had a little bit more that he wanted to add later on. So the additions that he added later on was called the Berak HaBayis. So in the Berak HaBayis, in Simen Kuf Nun Vav, in Shulchan Aruch, so the Beis Yosef says that, you know what, I read this Maharik, and the Maharik goes on and on and on, and he's very, very sure of himself, but I'm not so sure of him. This is source 7. He says, Maharik, Mishorish Kuf Tzadiyal, Perik Me'od B'tinim Eru, because of Shizeh Shekasa Rosh B'tshuva Shodom Yachal Odo B'chomokam Shiyirtzeh, that which the Rosh said, that a person can live whatever they want, and they'll pay the taxes, and they can compete in the same businesses, nobody can follow him. He says, Pshita, and he is, you know, sort of understating the amount of pshitas in that tshuva. Pshita Shirotza Loma Shemini Ayir Yechom Lakiv Alav Pibezim. All that means is that if Reuben wants to stop Shimon from coming into the city and competing with him, so he can't take Shimon to Bezin. Abam. In Tzigbo Yavini Ayir Lisko Desha Biape But if the people of the city are able to stop, to close the door in the face of Shimon and stop him from coming into the city, even if it's by going to the Tsar, even if it's by going to the person who is the governor of the town, Pshita Sherashus Biyodim. So it's obvious that they have the right to do it. And he adds the strong language, and only a fool and an idiot and a person with a really crooked head would possibly disagree with this proposition. With a footnote test. Okay. And then says the Berak HaBayis, he says, I don't get that at all. It's true that he waxed very eloquent about this. How could you possibly authorize somebody that they're going to go to some zoning board or governor of the city and not to a Beis Din? That doesn't sound right to me. Maybe it's Mesira, maybe it's an Isser or a Kos, but it's going to be forbidden on some level. Really went on and on. Lahasris neged acholik al drarav, to disagree strongly with whomever disagreed with him. But that's not going to stop me, Beis Yosef, from saying what I think is right, because we don't show favoritism when it comes to halakha. We have to simply get down to the nitty gritty. If something is wrong, then it is wrong. So we have this machlokus between the Ma'arik and the Beis Yosef. How would we paskin? So the Rama brings both opinions. The Rama says, at first he says that if you look in source 8 over here, in Siman Kuf Nun Vav, Sif Zayin, he says that if somebody wants to come into the city, third line, Yeshem Shter Shus Biyadim, Yuchla Adam Lodu B'chol Mokam Shiyasim, and Hashem Kano Yivah Chazaka. Then he says, V'yesh Cholkin, V'omim, T'yachol Nimkos Biyadim. But there are those who disagree and say that the person can come in. V'prat V'sman Hazeh, Shidarm Tachas Umas, so Yishlocha, Shim Tosu Yivyon, Shiyavad Dekilkum in a Goyim. Especially nowadays, you have too many Jews, you might have too many problems, you might have pogroms, you might have persecutions. That's, I think, what the Ma'arik was really fired up about, if you go on and continue to read like the second half of his tshuva. So somebody comes along, he's considered like a rodev. Now, there's a period here. I didn't put the period in, it wasn't me. But when I cut and paste, copied and paste from, I didn't cut it off, but when I copied and pasted from the Bar Ilan CD-ROM where I saw the source, so this comes out as a period. But really, I think the period is misleading over here. I'll explain why in a second. After the period, he says, but everybody agrees that if the people from Mantova, from the first city, can stop the people from the second city from coming in, they have the right to do that. And he quotes from the Ma'arik. Now I ask you, based on the shiur that we've given thus far, the words, Ulukuliyama, who's speaking here? Who's speaking here? Who's that? Is it the Ramah speaking or is it the Ma'arik speaking? Who's saying Ulukuliyama? It's the Maharik. The Maharik. The Maharik already said to us. He said that even the Rosh, who says that everybody has the right to come into the city, would agree that if you're not taking the person to Beis Din, you're just using your own efforts to convince the governor not to let the person into the city. Then he would agree as well. But that's the Maharik speaking. It's not the Ramah. I think that what happened was that some of the people who read the Ramah, especially if you put a period there, later on said, oh, look, the Ramah said Ulukuliyama. The Ramah said that if you're just intervening through the governor, so then even the first view would certainly be of the opinion that this would be perfectly permissible, and therefore the Ramah is essentially passing like the Maharik. So I don't know the Ramah is passing or not. The Ramah brings both opinions, but Ulukuliyama, in my humble opinion, is not the Ramah speaking, it's the Ramah quoting from the Maharik. So there are those who say, oh, we see that the Ramah passes like the Maharik. I don't think it's 100% certain. But one thing that's a big question mark is, why does he quote the Maharik altogether when the Beis Yosef rejected it? Well, sometimes the Ramah will go against the Beis Yosef. We all know that, but we don't necessarily find that in the Darkei Moshe, his commentary to the Torah, that he went against him. One thing that I think is considered to be pretty well known is that the Ramah had the Beis Yosef, but he didn't necessarily have the Beis Kabayis. So there is a suggestion which is made that had the Ramah seen that the Beis Yosef disagreed with the Maharik and the Beis Kabayis, he never would have quoted him altogether. He wouldn't have made it into the Ramah. But the Maisa, he made it into the Ramah. So now that he made it into the Ramah, the question is, so do we pass them like the Maharik? So there are a number of poskim who say, the Maharish Dam, for example, says that the Maharik was considered to be Migdolei HaRishonim, who's a very, very distinguished personality, distinguished posek. The Maharik passed in this way. So even though you might quibble with the Maharik, the Beis Kabayis, the Beis Yosef, clearly quibbles with the Maharik, nonetheless, he made it into the Ramah, and he made it into our halakhic literature, and therefore we pass him like the Maharik. Comes along the Avnei Nesser and says, I'll make it easy for you. You don't need to pass him like the Maharik. If you have a case of a zoning variance where the only person that can allow the individual to have whatever rights they're seeking is the zoning board, or let's say the governor of the city or the iriyah, so then everybody would agree. Even the Beis Yosef would agree with the Maharik in that case. What do you mean? The Beis Yosef was only disagreeing with the Maharik in a case where you didn't necessarily have the ability to, where it wasn't necessarily fully in the hands of the Sarayir. Meaning what? Meaning that Shimon could have come into Mantova, and if nobody would have opened up their mouth, it would not have been a potsepet mitzav safe, he would have been able to come in. But now, Reuven decides, oh, I know that I'll be able to stop him through the Sarayir. I'll be able to stop him through the Sarayir, so therefore, I'm going to utilize my rights to stop him through the Sarayir, and then I will be able to stop Shimon from coming in. But let's say that if not for the Sarayir, there's not a chance in the world that Reuven would have been able to come in. So maybe that's a different story. Why would that be a different story? Because if you think about it, what really is the dispute that's going on over here between the Maharik and the Beis Yosef? To say the dispute between the Maharik and the Beis Yosef is that the Maharik is saying that if I have two parties who have a zechus, right? They both want to get an aveda. They won't both want to pounce on this lost object. Reuven sees that Shimon's pouncing on it, so he's allowed to undercut him and take the lost object for himself. And the counter argument, that of the Beis Yosef, is that no, that's when you have nobody really has a zechus yet. But in this particular case, where Shimon wants to come in from another city and live in the city and compete in business in the city, so it's like the Metzias is already in his hands, that he already has that ability. Since he already has that ability, therefore you can't take it away from him. That's considered to be mazik. You're actually harming him. It's not just a minias rebach, a deprivation, a profit, but it's an actual mazik, and that you wouldn't be allowed to do. But comes along the Avnei Nezer and says, that's only true in the event that Shimon already has that right. But if Shimon doesn't have that right, because it's not just the question that the Sarayir has the ability of stopping Shimon from coming into the city, but Shimon won't be allowed to come into the city unless he gets a permit unless he gets a permit from the Sarayir, he doesn't have, then he doesn't have the schus yet. So then even the Beis Yosef will agree with the Marik. What was the case of the Avnei Nezer? The case of the Avnei Nezer was a strange case. I mean, from what I can tell, it's sort of a strange case. It's source 6. That is where you have a Beis Knesset. A Beis Knesset that was set up as sort of a shtibel. It was sort of a shtibel, and there was a big tzaddik that was able to make a living, I guess, off of appeals and aliyos and membership dues or whatever. However you make a living off of a shtibel, he's making a living off of a shtibel. He passes away, this great tzaddik. Now his grandson is making a living off of the shtibel, and some other fellow who comes along, an ish echad. Up until now we have a tzaddik, we have the nechad of the tzaddik, and now we have an ish echad, so you kind of know what direction this tshuva is going. So some ish echad comes along, and he decides that he's going to build a competing shul, a competing Beis Knesset. He's going to take away Mispalim, and when you take away Mispalim, you're also going to take away income. So therefore, the second fellow was very, very upset. So he decided, you know what I'm going, was very upset that the second fellow was building the Beis Knesset. The first fellow went to the government, okay, the gubernatorial. He went to the gubernatorial officials of his vicinity, namely zoning board, okay? And he said, Shloba say slowi shayon, abesa tefila shalom. Do not give this second ish echad fellow the ability to open up his own Beis Knesset and take away from my mispalalim. So is he considered to be a moiser? That's the Avnei Nezer's first question. Is he considered to be a moiser? So he says, no, he's not considered to be a moiser. And this was a whole question based on a Truma Sedeshin that said that when you're allowed to sometimes take the law into your own hands, you're not allowed to hand somebody over to governmental officials. But he says that's when the governmental officials are going to intervene in a dispute and take some property you're fighting over and grab it and give it to you. But what if the property is property that's held by the governmental officials in the first place? So then you have to go to them because they're the ones who are holding the property. So he says that therefore this is not a case of Moser, because the idea of granting a permit to somebody to open up a shul, which they would not be able to open up the shul without that permit, so of course you have to go to the government official in order for the permit to be given altogether. So saying to them, hold your permit and don't give it to that person. And so since they're not taking anything away from anybody or distributing anything that doesn't belong to them, they're just holding on to that which they already have. So that would not be a problem of Moser according to the Trumas HaDeshim. But then he gets around to problem of Akos. So remember we started out last week, for those who were here, saying that there were two potential issues with the zoning boards. One is Mesira and the other is Arkaos. So it's very interesting because the Avnei Nezer really latches on to both of these different aspects of the prohibition. He starts off talking about Mesira, and then as he continues, he talks about Arkaos. And he says that would it be an issue of Arkaos? So he quotes from the Maharik, and he says, well, according to the Maharik, for sure, we would not have a problem over here, because the Maharik says that you have the ability to stop somebody from coming into the city, so certainly you would have the ability to stop somebody from opening up the shul, if it means that you're going to turn to the Sarayir, to the government officials, and get them to not give the permit for this person to open up the shul. So that would be okay. But then he points out, but the problem is that we have a machlokis, because we have a disagreement from the Beis Yosef who disagrees with him and says that because of the fact that you are essentially hurting the second person who would otherwise have the ability to come in, so you have no right to hurt the second person. So take a look at the last paragraph of source 6. So he says that, well, we have to figure out what is it that the Beis Yosef was getting at. If what the Beis Yosef was getting at was this is going to be a problem of our kaos, krakasavnu de'enze inyan l'nidon didon. So he said that this does not apply. The problem of using the governmental court would not be an issue over here, because the object in question, namely the permit to build the shul in the first place, is a dava masur biyada memshala im yitnu im lo yitnu. They're the ones who are holding the hands with me. So they're the ones who are holding the permit in their hands, and therefore that's not a problem. But then look four lines down. He says, but gamim kavanasa de menido nidan en yochol limchos ya apim yochol biyatzmo. that maybe the argument is, in this particular case, that even if you have the right to take the law, like the Maharik said, that you can sometimes fight for your own rights, but when you're fighting for your own rights, in terms of the litigation, we're not talking about handing somebody over, in terms of the litigation itself, that doesn't necessarily give you the ability to litigate the issue in the event that you can't necessarily prove that you're correct. Because remember, here we're talking about a case, your normal case, where a person is avi inish din lenafshe, is a case where if you would go to Beis Din, you would prevail. What was the Maharik talking about? He was talking about a case where if you would go to Beis Din, you would not prevail. According to Rabbeinu Tam, you don't have the ability to stop the second person from walking into the city. It's more of a kind of a situation where you are simply trying to get the basketball out from underneath the pile, and it's a question of who's going to be more savvy about it. Are you allowed to bring in this official? So he said, well, the whole reason of the Maharik is that it's considered as if the first person who hasn't come in, or the second person from the other city who hasn't come in yet, is not considered to have the zuchus. So it's like fighting over a basketball. While the Beis Yosef says, no, it's considered to be like a mazik, because the second person has the right to come in. So here, his big punchline is, when came benidon didon, shashenu enu yachol lasos beis tefila b'liv bilti reshus hamemshalah, in this particular case, it's different, because the second fellow has no ability to come in without getting the permit in the first place from the memshalah. Therefore, there's no way to argue that he already has the zuchus. The second fellow has to get the permit anyway. So in such a case, therefore there's no mazik involved over here, because the second fellow does not have any zuchus already in hand when they absolutely need a permit. So now we can go back to Rabbi Fleischman's tshuva, and we understand why Rabbi Fleischman distinguished in his case. He's saying that even according to the case of the Avnei Nezer, in the Avnei Nezer's case, the second fellow couldn't possibly build the shul unless he actually got the permit. So there was nothing that was being taken away from him. And in the case of the shul, they just wanted to build on its vacant lot, so the municipality, they already had the ability to build a shul there. That was something that they obtained the right to do a long time previously. It's just that somebody here wants to come along and make trouble and say, oh, I think that I'm entitled to a right of way. So then there's no proof from the Avnei Nezer that you have the ability to do that, since the shul would otherwise be able to build. And now the person is just creating problems that certainly would be problematic according to the opinion of the Beis Yosef, where it would actually be mazik, the shul, and the rights of the shul. Remember that the general principle when it comes to use of property in Hilchos Shechinim is one that's articulated by the Chazon Ish. This is in Baba Basra, Simen Yud Aleph, Os Aleph. The Chazon Ish says that whenever one person, according to Halacha, has the right to use their property in a particular way, and somebody else stops them from doing so, so that person is considered to be a mazik and a gadav, basically, to stop a person from the rightful use of their property. So that would be an important distinction between those cases. But one case that would emerge from the Avnei Nezer as permissible would be if somebody did not have the right to build, let's say, an addition to their property, or they want to build some additional use of their, they want to use their property to rent for commercial purposes, or for income purposes, they want to rent a certain portion of their property, and they need to get a variance to be allowed to do it, because the zoning doesn't allow them to rent the property, to build a new wing onto the property, to build another floor onto their property, and now you want to oppose it. Halakhically, maybe I don't have the right to stop my neighbor from building another wing or bringing in additional tenants. However, once the law says that this individual is required to receive a variance in order to be able to build, so do I have the right to now appear before the zoning board and say that I want to protest this variance? So take a look at the source. It's an English source. Source 17, from a nice, a big time machachem, he's with the Beis Avad Halakha Center by the name of Rabbi Shmuel Onyx Wax. I know him personally. I've dealt with him, a very, very fine Talmid Chacham. So he raises the question, generally speaking, what are a person's rights when it comes to zoning laws? Specific example, Reuven wants to build a typical type of construction. Nitzchei Shchedim, the halakhic laws, will not stop him from doing so, but he needs a variance from local zoning board, but his neighbor Shimon is opposed to the project. Now, the poskim do say, if Shimon is opposed to the project simply because he hates Reuven's guts, and he doesn't want Reuven to get something that he wants, but the project doesn't really upset Shimon, maybe he doesn't even live next door, maybe he lives like five blocks away, but he just wants to protest because he has sour grapes against Reuven, so that we would not allow, because that is what we refer to as kofin amidas dom. Zen nenem is zelo chaser, Reuven gets a benefit, Shimon wouldn't lose out, and he's just going to protest because he has the right to do so, so that's the wrong thing to do. That would be sort of in the category of what the Chazon Ish is inveighing against that you can't do. But here, it presumably has some legitimate reason that it blocks a nice view that he would otherwise have. It's going to create, you know, some extra traffic. Extra traffic could even be a halakhically good reason. So the answer is, so over here he quotes, and he says that the poskim discussed someone's trying to move into a ghetto and needs permission from a local governor to move in. That's the Cheskas Yishuv. The Ma'arik rules someone who's going to be negatively affected may lobby the governor to prevent the other person from moving in, because this is considered to be a mitzia, that each ward is trying to take full advantage of their mitzia, and the Beis Yosef disagrees and says that it's a terrible thing to do. Now, as I pointed out over here, that you can go further and say that it's not simply a question of choosing the Ma'arik against the Beis Yosef. That's what he says. He says, practically, many poskim, including the Ramah, accept the Ma'arik's position. As I pointed out, the Ramah really is quoting both positions. When he says Kuliyama, I think he's just quoting the Ma'arik himself. But nonetheless, so he says, the minhag is to allow people to go to the zoning board. I think the minhag is based in part on the Ma'arik. The Ma'arishdam did say, Miyavo Acharamelech, that we do rely heavily on the Ma'arik, but he does say that that's only when what the new use of the property would cause some sort of a meaningful hezek to the neighbor. But fundamentally, even more than that, we are relying upon the Avnei Nezer, because the Avnei Nezer says that when there is a need for a permit, so then even the Beis Yosef would agree with the Ma'arik. Now, not everybody, yes?
Isn't the purpose of needing a variance is that the government thought there's some reason why we shouldn't just grant it? So therefore, if you come to complain, it's because, assuming it's legitimate, it's because that variance was needed for a reason, and you didn't reason.
Which is why we would say that most poskim, I think, would say that if it's a question of protesting a variance, you would have the right to come in front of the board, of the zoning board, and in fact, it wouldn't do you any good to come in front of the Bezin, because the Bezin's not the ones that have the ability to give out the variance. So here, when it comes to a variance, it makes a lot of sense. But let's say that there isn't really necessarily a need for the variance. It's interesting, the Piskei Choshen says that, he says, nobody really focused on this, but he's going to focus on it. He says, you know what, I think the Ma'arik, you'd say you want to rely upon the Ma'arik. He says the Ma'arik's case is, presumably, where Reuven himself, let's call the one who's moving in, let's say, is I called him Shimon before, so I want to confuse things. So it's Shimon himself. Shimon, who's moving into the community, he approaches the Tsar because he knows that he needs the Tsar's permission in order to move into the community. So he says that's the case where Reuven has the ability to come to the Tsar and say, I don't want you to give permission to Reuven. But that's only when Reuven was looking for the Tsar's permission in the first place. But if Reuven didn't involve the Tsar, so says the Piskei Choshen, I don't think you can infer even from Ma'arik that you would have the ability to involve the Tsar. When Shimon didn't approach the Tsar in the first place, so then Reuven doesn't have the right to go to the Tsar. So why am I mentioning this particular distinction? Because this plays out in another sort of case. Let's say it's a case where, in order for Shimon to build, Shimon really needs a variance, but most people could care less. In other words, you have a lot of cases like this in Eretz Yisrael. People are building an illegal merpeset, okay? Beyond the area that is officially the square footage of their apartment, they're building out, all right? They're building out into an area that they're not supposed to have. Or that it was something was supposed to only be used for a merpeset, and they're going to build out their kitchen in that area. And they're supposed to really get a variance for this. But the minhag ha'makom is, you don't bother getting a variance. But comes along Reuven says, Shimon is doing something he's not supposed to do. I'm going to complain to the authorities because he really needs to get a variance, and therefore I'm going to get them to stop him. So is he allowed to do that? Do we say, well, really, since Shimon required a variance, So that's just considered to be taking away something that's not a zuchus yet. Or do we say, no, if the minhag, so to speak, is that people don't bother with getting a variance, so then really Reuven is taking away from Shimon a zuchus that he really has. So the Sefer Emek HaMishpat says, yeah, you have to look at common practice. If common practice is that you don't bother, most people don't bother getting the variance, and now somebody is interceding and is preventing Shimon from building out his kitchen or building the merpeset or whatever without getting a variance, so then that would be contrary to halacha, because this is not a case where Shimon was really depending upon it, or we can say that the variance was really needed. But there are two different versions of this. You could say maybe the variance was not really needed, in which case you would have the machlokis, the way the Avnei Nezer learns between the Beis Yosef and the Ma'arik, or you can say like the Piskei Koshin that even the Ma'arik would not agree in this particular case, because if the minhag is then most people don't get the variance, so then what that means is that Shimon didn't turn to the Sar. He didn't turn to the Uriah in the first place. If he didn't turn to the Uriah, then nobody else is allowed to say, oh, well, he already started the process with the Uriah, so therefore I can continue the process and voice my objection with the Uriah, because he wasn't going through the Uriah in the first place. So that's basically the argument which is made by the Emek HaMishpat. Others make the same argument as well, but I did see that there was a Psak Din in Eretz Yisrael from a certain Dayanim, including Rav Eliezerov, where Rav Eliezerov quoted Rav Elyashiv as indicating that once you do have some sort of minhag year, but that there are certain requirements when it comes to building something and somebody's not keeping the requirements, so then simply as a matter of what we call minhag year, you have the right to insist that the other party follow the minhag year. So I saw that excerpt quoted by a Dayan for Eretz Chemda in the Gazit, Bezin and Eretz Yisrael, by the name of Rav Ido Rechnitz. So you take a look at the source in Rav Ido Rechnitz, that's the source 19, okay, going on, this is the page where you have the source 20 on the bottom of the Rush, and he says that, look at before you have the bolded paragraph. He says, don't make the argument to say that it doesn't really matter that this is the minhag that was adopted by the city is that you are supposed to receive a variance, you're supposed to receive a permit for a certain type of construction, but the minhag is that nobody follows that, so therefore it's as if there is no requirement for the ishur for the permit. He says, Mishum she'afim rabim bonim v'lo ishuri b'ni. It's a very interesting argument that he makes. I don't know if we'll accept this argument, mahalacha, but he says that even if you do have many people who do build without the requisite permit, yitachem sheberov mekomas hashkein lo yibiyas nagdus. That's only because the neighbors in those cases didn't complain. But if the neighbor complains, igloi milsa lamafreya, that this was a case where a permit was actually needed. Since there is a neighbor that comes forward and complains, it's as if he's the one who validates through his complaining that it was necessary to receive a permit, in which case it becomes permissible to complain. And therefore, it's his zuchus, so it does not matter if most people are not, in fact, receiving the requisite permits before they build. That does not take away a person's ability to complain against the proposed building project if they feel that they are going to be adversely affected. It's a very interesting question. I would say everybody would probably agree that if the neighbor who felt that he was being adversely affected was complaining for sakana reasons, because he felt that the neighbor was not following the requisite building codes, and as a result, he was jeopardizing the welfare of himself and his family, that there's going to be like a sewage running into his apartment, or there's going to be a fire risk or something like that. So even when it comes to Dinei Mesira, the Sma says that you can hand somebody over if your physical well-being is going to be at risk. So therefore, certainly in that case, if there would be some sort of a danger that would be created, certainly a public danger, but it seems to me even a private danger, one would be allowed to protest under those circumstances. I'll just end. We didn't have a chance to go through all of it, but I think we went through enough. There's a Chazal Ish, that has a different take on the machlokas between the Beis Yosef and the Ma'arik, that it's only when the Tsar, the governor, owns the city, so therefore it wouldn't be applicable if the city, if the Tsar doesn't own the city, and even the Ma'arik would agree with that. That the zoning boards don't generally have ownership of the cities, but we don't generally follow that particular approach. I will simply end with a comment that was made by the Piskei Koshin. Piskei Koshin says that the fundamental governing principle of all of Hilchos Shchenim, in his opinion, is Derachei Adarchei Noam, V'chol Nesivoseh Shalom. That it's extremely important for the ways of neighbors to be pathways of peace. And therefore, he says that the fundamental principle that you should follow in all of these cases is not simply that, you know, good fences make good neighbors, but good neighbors make good fences. That whenever somebody wants to be engaged in a particular building project, they want to add an addition to the property, they want to do something, to bring all the neighbors together and to find out ahead of time if there is any opposition, if there is, to work things out so it doesn't have to be a rip-roaring battle in front of a zoning board, to simply do everything in a fashion of shalom where you stave off any kind of battles or any kind of controversies or fights in front of the municipality or the zoning board or other authorities that there'd be from the get-go. So certainly, to the extent that any of these types of potential unpleasantries can be staved off from the beginning, that certainly is always the best thing, that everybody should always live b'shalom or b'shalva with each other.
Who's the publisher?